You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started today, I want to let you know about a free resource we're offering. It's an e-booklet called Pipeline: Succession at Every Level. Now, you may have already downloaded Developing Your Leadership Pipeline and walked through that with your staff team. If you have, awesome. This is your next step. Most of the time, when we think about succession, we think about replacing the person at the top. We need to think about, however, reproducing leaders at every level of your ministry. If you're ready to do that, then I would say go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. My name is Daniel M., the Director of Church Multiplication at Lifeway Leadership, and I'm here with the real Todd Adkins.
What? Why are you doing that? Why are you the real?
The real.
Because that's my Gmail?
Well, you're the one who just shared your Gmail address with other people. Your personal address. But because,
that's,
you know,
like, it's my burner email account anyway. Yeah. So that's where all the junk goes.
Yeah. That, well, because Todd Adkins, I mean, you're famous for being famous. So I had to just.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah. I had to put you out there as this is the real Todd Adkins.
There's a lot of fake ones out there.
Yeah, there are. And people have faked you. Like, they have copied your
Twitter actually, stuff. Yeah, that's a true story.
Yeah, so we are with the real Todd Adkins, not the one that asks you for money in direct messages.
Yeah.
Nope. We are with Will Heath, and we are going to be talking about succession.
Yes. Okay, so what you need to know about Will is you haven't heard of Will, but that's okay. The reason why you haven't heard of Will is he's
the brain. You know, Pinky the brain. He's the brain.
He's the brain.
I'm not going to say who on Succession is, but
no, on Succession. So he actually works with us Oxano. But what he does is very delicate work. Because if I were to name names, you would definitely know the names of the pastors and churches that he has worked with on the topic of succession.
Exactly.
We've signed NDAs. We can't talk about any of that today, but we will take advantage of his experience and succession junkie knowledge. So I can't remember. I've talked about it on the podcast not too long ago. In preparation for next year's conference, I read, you know, 5 or 6 books on succession within like a month, and we met right around that time. So it was really fun to be able to nerd out with him on succession, because of course he had read all those, and we were able to dig into them in great detail.
And that was last year, because this in a few months, we're at the time of this recording, we're going to be having our succession conference.
It's coming right up.
Yes, it is.
All right. So that is who I believe Will to be. Will, tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your perspective on you?
Oh, not nearly as high as yours. I can assure you that. Live in the booming metropolis of Murphy, Texas. Self-proclaimed succession planning junkie. I've actually been studying this topic for about 10 years, and working, consulting, coaching leaders and ministries for almost 7 of those years. And that's it. That work for Oxano Lead Navigator. My role is to help build out Oxano's and to lead the initiative to build out Oxano's succession planning platform, to collaborate with you guys at Lifeway. Two daughters, been married to Allie for 18 years. Glad I actually remember that. And her birthday is this Saturday. And so that's my world.
Yeah. What did you get your wife?
And what are you going to do?
Well, I just bought it last night. She's not listening to this podcast, or it will air after she will listen to it.
It'll air after.
So I bought her a new camera. Both my girls are involved in athletics, and so she wants a new camera that can Wi-Fi pictures, like text pictures to herself. I don't know why that's important, but she wanted that. And so we're going to be that crazy photo family on the sides, taking pictures of everybody's kids. So that's kind of our thing.
I get that. That's pretty cool. The fact that you can transfer that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
All right, let's get into this.
All right. So first question, what are the most significant barriers for succession planning in the church?
Yeah, without a doubt, it is the language we use. You know, Bill Hybels, it's a classic work, Axioms. His first axiom is language matters. In the topic of succession planning, the language we use absolutely matters, and it's the source of our greatest potential to unlock planning. But language is also the most significant barrier to our conversations for that. And so, real quick, how I help churches and ministry leaders think through this is I actually pretty quickly ask churches to stop using the phrase or the term succession planning, and instead, what I prefer is for them to use what I refer to as the five conversations of succession planning. And those just very quickly are protecting organizational continuity. That's one definition. It's one way people use the phrase succession planning. And when they say succession planning, but they mean protecting organizational continuity, what they're talking about is they want to make sure that the church, that the organizational side of the church is actually prepared to navigate a season of transition. And so that's one conversation. Another conversation is proactive exit planning. Proactive exit planning is when ministry leaders will talk practically and candidly about the issues of deferred compensation or role identification for the senior leader that is transitioning out of their role. And so being able to talk very clearly about that. Third one, emergency transition management. It's the process of developing a response plan in anticipation of the unknown.
So let me jump in right there. The vast majority of the time, at least in my experience, when I talk to people about succession or succession planning, they'll be like, yeah, we got a plan.
And absolutely,
it's a 1 or 2 page document that's absolutely gathering dust in a filing cabinet somewhere. And it's really what they're saying is this type of plan, this emergency
transition plan.
Yeah. Yep. And it's not even an emergency transition plan. It's just like the very basics of what happens in the first 24 hours if somebody gets hit by a bus. And when they say it's your hit by a bus plan, you're immediately dismissing it as if it will never happen. And that's a big problem too.
But not even most churches don't even have that.
No, but the big ones know that they're supposed to because somebody's asked them.
Yeah, but that's the extent to it.
Yeah,
that's a huge problem. It's the one of my favorite conversations. Again, it's a pastor, I won't say his name, but talked about succession planning, and I asked him what his plan was, and he showed me an envelope, and in that envelope was the name of a person. That was the extent of his plan. I'm like,
I have chosen one.
Yeah. Just slide it across the table.
So what happens is 6 years later, he dies. Somebody opens it, and it was the student pastor that left 3 years ago.
Exactly.
Okay, what are the last two?
So the number four is one that is very near and dear to you guys' hearts: leadership pipeline development. Woo-hoo! It's growing in secular context. It's actually the dominant conversation, but it's a growing conversation in the church. Is how do we build bench strength? How do we identify leaders for increased levels of involvement and leadership within the organization? And then the last one is actually one that I run into most, and it becomes a pretty big barrier in planning, is that when people equate succession planning with new leader hiring, and that's the search idea. And so the five, just to recap: proactive organizational continuity, or protecting poor organizational continuity, proactive exit planning, emergency transition management, leadership pipeline development, and then new leader hiring. When I say language is our biggest barrier, it's that the term succession planning itself is ambiguous. And when a pastor hears the term succession planning and they define it one way, but the executive pastor, he says the word succession planning and he defines it another way, or if a board member brings their definition and we're not all on the same page, then what happens is it gets awkward and we disengage from the conversation and we defer it or delay it completely. And so the biggest barrier that I hope just to communicate in our time together is just we need to expand the language we use and be more specific with our language, and doing so will help just even help us understand the holistic nature of how to navigate this conversation in our churches.
Will, I'd love for you to just share some best practices. You know, you outlined it very, you articulated those five areas very well. And I think for most of our listeners, once again, we're going to think succession, emergency planning. That's kind of what we naturally go to. So I appreciate the breadth and the length of thinking that you have had on this subject. And it does show in the way that you've been able to articulate that. But in light of you working with churches, having helped churches successfully do succession well, what are some best practices that you have encountered to ensure that the succession does go well?
Yeah, great question, Daniel. Thanks. Well, the first one, just obviously kind of reiterating, is be more specific with our language. That is a best practice. But number two is know what your bylaws require. I was meeting with a pastor of a church who was the president of a particular denomination at one point in his very public career. They don't have bylaws. They don't have them. And so,
and how old?
You know, when you have
an organization.
How old is this particular? He's the founding pastor of this particular church, and he was the president of the denomination for a period of time.
Okay, all right.
But in their local, they don't have bylaws, and so a very best practice is have bylaws, number one, but then also be aware of what your bylaws say. I was on the phone with a client this week. They had a pretty significant legal issue that came up in the transition because of a lack of clarity in their bylaws. And so a best practice would be to know what your bylaws state. That really is an extension of the protecting organizational continuity conversation. Number three, I'd say start planning earlier. When churches don't take a holistic view of succession planning and they're not navigating all five conversations intentionally, what they do is they relegate their thinking either to the emergency planning or the new leader hiring. And those things typically happen so quick to the transition, especially in the case of emergency transition management, that there's really no room to prepare or respond or even be intentional about the way you navigate. And so I'll just say best practice, you know, believe it or not, guys, I have organizations that are starting this conversation intentionally 10 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're really taking a long view of this because they're having a more holistic picture. And so that's another best practice. Number four, as simple and maybe just obvious as this may sound, when leaders sit around the table and talk to one another, they need to be honest and they need to be courageous. I tell you, how many people are just simple cowards when it comes to this conversation? They don't lead with courage. And I mean that with the people sitting around the table and they're inappropriately deferring to their aging pastor. But I'm also speaking to pastors that are in that chair and they're contemplating their transition. You know, our pastors stand up on Sundays and they tell our people to have faith and trust God and be courageous in the way we execute our faith. But when it comes to this issue, they don't follow their own advice. And I know that's kind of harsh, but it requires, this conversation requires honesty. It requires courage. It requires deep levels of faith and trust that God's going to take care of us and guide us through the process if we're willing to press in and steward this process.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, it's an incredibly vulnerable position for the pastor to be in.
Absolutely.
To be talking about. I mean, I remember my parents, I was born into a church plant. My parents had just joined the church and I was the first baby born, I think a year into the church being planted. Aww. And what's interesting is the church grew, had significant ministry in Vancouver. And I don't know, I knew it was in the bylaws of the church. I don't know if it was a denominational thing or if it was just the how it was written at the beginning, but it said something to the effect of, hey, when the senior pastor hits 60, he has to change. It didn't say that he had to retire from ministry, but it just, if a pastor hit 60, he had to leave the church and they had to bring a new pastor in. Now, I don't know why they did it the way they did it, but they did, you know, going to your earlier point of having bylaws, that was in the bylaws. Unfortunately, the church was growing and thriving when the pastor hit 60 and he had to leave. because he himself was a part of putting that in the bylaws. When he left, he actually went to a different church because he couldn't stay at our church anymore. And after that, we have now had, I think it's the third or fourth pastor since he's left. And the church went from over 1,000 to now 150. And just, it just has not gone well for the church. And it's just interesting, you know, it's, so it's important to have the bylaws, but you need to kind of think. Think through it really well. Don't just copy the one, you know, in other churches down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And in that conversation, what's, you know, it's always, we always see 2020 looking in the rearview mirror, right? But that's a case where it sounds like there wasn't much proactive thought given to how do we maintain organizational continuity.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you have a pastoral transition, and because that conversation didn't take place for a lot of reasons, then there was no continuity. And now there's a church that was the shell of itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that when we had a conversation, so one of the things that I love about what Oxano does and about what you've done is an iconization of succession planning. And so I was talking about different types of succession planning and you were like, oh, like this. And you showed me some visuals. So I was wondering, what are some good timelines for different types of succession? So what are some different types of succession? And then if you throw a good timeline there for each one, let's talk about those. I mean, I can talk about some of them too, but the big thing was, I remember us having this conversation and you actually had icons for them, and I love visual views and how they transfer. So talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah. So let me address it this way. First of all, looking at from the lens specifically those conversations, those five conversations, let me answer it that way. And then let me kind of back into just process pathways a little bit. When it comes to the leadership pipeline development conversation, the timeline to have that conversation is right now. Like, there's no reason to wait to begin developing leaders within the church. And Todd, you can unpack that with deeper conviction and knowledge than I could. But facilitating that leadership pipeline development conversation, every church, every ministry in the country needs to be doing that right now. Emergency transition management. There is no timeline. Plan now and do more than stick a name in an envelope. When it comes to proactive exit planning, that kind of a best practice is to really have some very intentional conversations around 7 to 10 years out and be thinking and having very direct financial preparation conversations, having very direct and open role transfer conversations. Daniel, to your suggestion, to your story that you brought up, does my dad stay at the church and just take on a different seat on the bus, or does he need to leave altogether? I mean, what's that role identification and having those conversations 7 to 10 years out? Protecting organizational continuity. That is something churches should be doing as a regular discipline of management. But when it comes to viewing that conversation through the lens of an anticipated key leader transition, about 4 to 6 years, my average client is about 5 years out when we start engaging the organizational continuity question as it relates to their transition. And then the new leader hiring piece, it's about 1 to 2 years out, depending on the type of process you're going to implement. All of those conversations, really, in my conviction, is those conversations should be had before we actually formally start navigating the pathways that you were referencing earlier, Todd. And those three pathways are, do we do a stop and go where the leader transitions and there's a formal period of time where they step out and their successor steps in, and so they're disconnected. There's no overlap, for example. And then another process pathway would be an intentional interim. And you know, where you hire a person to lead for a particular period of time or to accomplish a specific task before the successor, the permanent successor, is identified, or then what I said a minute ago, the overlap.
Sometimes so, that one is unintentional. Sometimes there's a buffer guy.
Absolutely.
There's a sacrificial lamb. After a guy's been there for like 40 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, on a side note, before you get to the third one, how let's talk about that sacrificial lamb.
Yeah,
is that anecdotal? Have you seen that a lot? Where if an existing pastor has had a 10+ year pastorate, and then he retires, how long is the average tenure of the next guy?
Man, I don't have that data. I don't have that data. I haven't seen that. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I have yet to kind of uncover that. Let me tell you the big prop from my perspective. There's kind of this embedded thought, especially in Southern Baptist world, that the default assumption is if you're going to have a long tenured pastor, then you default to an intentional interim because there's no way that a person can follow a long tenured legacy pastor. That's the dominant thinking. There's nothing further from the truth. What happens is because people, I could read about your dad's story, Daniel, through articles or whatever gets out there. I can hear it through the rumor mill, but I actually don't know what went into planning with your dad's transition. So we don't really know what goes into planning in various transitions. And so what we do is we assume that the process pathway actually is the key point of strategy in the transition, and meaning that there's strategic benefit in an intentional interim that is better to do that when following a long tenured leader. When in reality, the way a leader transitions is what I just call strategy neutral. One's not better than the other. One's not more effective. One's not more important. It's completely contextual. The relative health and effectiveness of a transition has less to do with the pathway a leader follows and has more to do with the overall health of the organization or the ecosystem and how we manage and prepare, how we navigate those conversations, to put it another way. Or it has to do with the implementation of the pathway. But what we do, because we're not sitting inside the planning rooms with the churches, as outsiders, we formulate our opinions of effectiveness based on the pathway that was followed. Man, that's a myth about transition that I hope to absolutely destroy. And so because of that, we think churches, especially with long tenured pastors, they jump prematurely to an intentional interim. Yeah, that's not because it's better. It's because we really don't understand what goes into preparing for transition.
Okay. So if I understand you correctly, then while the sacrificial lamb might happen, it will often happen because not enough planning has gone into building clarity, building transition, building all that beforehand. So if that has not happened, then oftentimes you will get a sacrificial lamb.
You get the unintentional,
interim.
And the reason why, I mean, think about this, guys. If a church doesn't spend time really deeply thinking about who they are leading up to transition, then it increases exponentially the likelihood that they're going to hire an incredible pastor for somebody else's church. And when they do that, that mismatch happens not because they hired a bad person. That's not the fault of the leader that was hired. That completely lies at the feet of the church that hired out of the ignorance of who they are or out of their ignorance for what they need. Yeah. And if we're not navigating those conversations, then if we're not being intentional, giving ourselves enough time, if we're not careful what our bylaws say, all of those things impact the health of the transition on the other side of the hire.
Okay.
And it's critically important.
Okay. Good deal. Now, this year's theme for our pipeline conference, and you can learn more about that at myleadershippipeline.com, is succession. And we have obviously John Piper, Bob Russell, both who have gone through healthy, successful
HB Charles,
successful succession at the senior pastor level. But the conference, as much as it's on succession, it's on succession at every level. So
Totally. Because, you know, hopefully you're not going to have succession at the high level very often. Hopefully, usually when we think about succession, we think about it as the senior pastor level. But the reality is succession happens at every level, and succession happens at the first two levels of your pipeline more than any other. That's your volunteers who are leading themselves and your leaders who are leading others. that's where you're going to have the most turnover or churn or transition or whatever you want to call it. So what does succession look like in the different levels of ministry?
Yeah, it's a great question. At its most basic level, in my experience, it actually looks the same as it does at the highest level. The difference is I'm going to spend the frequency that you referenced, Todd, but also the amount of planning that goes into transitioning a senior key leader is very different than what goes into just the natural normative transition of people navigating on-ramps and off-ramps within the ministry cycle itself and programming. But at the end of the day, those three process pathways that we talked about, there's really basically three ways leaders throughout the organization transition. Not everybody transitions that follows the same pathway. So what we do, if we did an overlap for the senior pastor, doesn't necessarily mean I would do an overlap for a children's a nursery volunteer. I'd probably do a stop and go, or I may want to build in an overlap or whatever. But my point is, there's three basic ways leaders transition, regardless of their position. And so that's fundamentally the same. What the challenge is churches actually understanding why they would use one process pathway for a transition versus another, and having as much conviction about what they're saying no to as far as selecting those process pathways as they do with the conviction of saying yes to one.
Okay, so those three process pathways, stop and go, intentional
interim.
Or unintentional interim. And
then the third one is an overlap. Let me give you an example of an overlap in a children's ministry context. So I worked with a church, this brilliant idea. They actually did at a certain level of within their org structure in the children's ministry, they did 7-month commitments, and they intentionally designed, and the reason it was 7 months is because 1 month was an overlap. So at this particular level, at this leadership level within the structure, it was a 7-month commitment. The first period of time was an overlap shadowing, the person you're taking over from. And then the last period of time, section of time was shadowing and preparing the person that was going to take your spot. And so they built an overlap at a volunteer level, right? You know, a lot of times when you're hiring student ministers, a lot of times that's a stop and go, not necessarily an overlap. In some cases, it'll be an intentional interim, but a lot of times that's a stop and go. So understanding those fundamental pathways are very similar throughout the organization. What I refer to as the five signposts, we probably don't have time to get into that now, but the way that just thinking about implementation of transition, making sure that we're accounting for those key areas critical to implementation. Again, those need to be considered at all levels within the organization. It's the difference lies in the amount of preparation and planning and communication throughout the organization that happens at each level.
Good deal.
But the principles are the same.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and move us to our last question, which is the one that everybody has probably been waiting for. And that is, how do I bring up the topic of succession with my pastor?
Ooh.
Just bask in the tension of that.
Yeah. It's been great talking to you guys, man. I'm going to cut it off before. Man, this is the question, isn't it? Yeah. My first insight into succession as a 30-year-old guy, I was dumb enough to ask a pastor mentor of mine who was more than double my age about his eventual transition.
Did you say when can I take over?
No.
So when am I going to get this?
I'm ready. I'm like, he's like the chaplain of the football team, the fire department, and the police department. Like the benevolent spiritual godfather of the city that he was a pastor at. It was a First Baptist church. And I was just asking, I was like, hey, Steve, man, when you get ready to transition, what's that look like? And guys, he didn't have an answer. But I became in that moment the only person on this planet, not even his wife, that he talked to about it. And he cried for 2 hours. And what I learned in that moment, it's my first observation as a 30-year-old guy, succession never even landed on my radar at that point until that conversation with Steve, was succession's personal long before it's tactical.
Long before it's tactical.
And one of the mistakes, again, going back to those five conversations, a lot of times the mistake second chair leaders or board members make in this conversation is they have a very myopic view of understanding of transition, and they talk about it, and the implications are through the lens of new leader hiring, because they wait too long. But if I engage in a conversation around proactive exit planning, I can start that conversation and I don't have to deal with the mortality issues that leaders navigate that are very real, very deep seated. I don't have to talk about firing them or transitioning them out. I can have a proactive exit planning conversation and posture that with a very deep sense of honor. Hey, pastor, we know you're not ready yet, but when you are, we want to make sure we're doing everything we can to prepare you financially. And we also, man, you know, just because you retire from ministry at some point doesn't mean you're done in ministry. And so we want to help you understand and think through and give you space to be in permission to be thinking about what your next season is. Those tones are very different. But if pastor's 68, kind of slowing down, and you drop succession planning on them, then with no context to the other conversations, and you have never had the other conversations, you immediately go to the most tense place of transition conversation, which is the search conversation. And at that point, really, let's be honest, a lot of times when we wait too long, it's not a transition conversation. It's just a way to navigate a termination conversation. We just try to make it nice. So be thoughtful and start relational, not strategic. Demonstrate genuine care for them. It's my friend, my mentor, Steve, nobody had ever asked him that question. And when I ask it, the floodgates open, because it represented so much tension. And here's a guy who had ministered to a community, had planted several churches, had led an incredible ministry, and nobody ever thought to care for his soul in this conversation.
Yeah, because part of succession, as you outlined, if you know the five and the three, and just a lot of different paradigms for us, that's been incredibly helpful. Oftentimes, we think of succession as really functionally, hey, this leader is going to be going, and who's going to be replacing them. But for the leader that is going, for the leader that is leaving, Todd, we've talked about this a lot. That leader needs to have a better life or a good life to go into, which is why it's so personal.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a Goldsmith book on succession that the big takeaway from that is there's one visual that is brilliant, and that is the typical ramp up and ramp down of a CEO. So it's like, hey, here is how much time I spend running the business. Here's how much time I spend preparing a successor. And here's the amount of time I spend outside creating a life worth living outside of my role. Now, I would say that's difficult for any leader, any business leader. But it's super personal and super spiritual, frankly, for a pastor. Because when your job is ministry, your life and your job, everything is ministry. Yeah. So it is so intrinsically tied to who you are. You better have a plan in place so that you don't either die just of a broken heart or you try to come back or you just become miserable.
I guess, Will, I have a little bit of a bonus question here. For the, let's say you do have a long tenured pastor who has successfully transitioned, and let's say they have brought someone else on. And I mean, this guy, like that example, they're the chaplain to the football team in the community, just really a solid part of the community. What should that pastor, what should that former pastor do in terms of church attendance, in terms of even involvement in community? Should they, because it's there's going to be a lot of overlap, right? And I mean, what would be a healthy thing for that pastor?
Yeah. Kind of a best practice that I've observed is from their church life.
Yeah.
They, for a period of time, my recommendation is 9 to 12 months. The pastor never steps back into the, does not step back into the church.
Okay. What if people in the church call them and they're like, hey, can we go for coffee? Can we, it's, they're an influencer or.
Yeah. They, you know, to meet with friends is okay. To meet with people that are trying to complain about the current guy they don't like is out of bounds. And they just need to have the discipline to call that out and not entertain those conversations. Okay. Now, I want to be clear about something. That extends to the pastor, not their spouse. Unless their spouse is also transitioning, which we haven't talked about at all, but I just want to be clear, when I talk about succession planning and the leadership leader transition, when the pastor transitions, it's not just their transition plan, it's also a transition plan for their spouse. Well, and if a spouse is in leadership, that transition needs to happen at the same time.
And sometimes they have a significant amount of influence. Significant amount. Okay. So one of the things I do want to say, one of the great ways to be able to bring this conversation up is through books. We've had a great conversation today, and I know that you've got a book coming out later this fall on this subject. So why don't we have you on again? When that comes out.
I want to talk about the spousal thing too. I mean, that's
big stuff.
That is. I mean, we do need to talk about that. So we'll definitely have you back on.
Another last two things. One, Oksano is a sister to us. We get along well. We both talk about pipeline. We both talk about a lot of things. Succession is one of those things. They are actually doing a succession boot camp that's coming up pretty soon. What are the dates on that, Will?
Yeah, it's August 29th and 30th. We're doing boot camps, three boot camps throughout the country. The succession planning boot camp is going to be in Dallas, Texas, at one of my clients, Fellowship Bible Church, Pastor Gary Brandenburg, August 29th and 30th. And here's a surprise for you. For 5LQ leaders, we actually have a discount code.
Yay!
For anybody. And so if you have some folks that'd be interested in checking that out, the discount code is actually 5LQ25. Capital 5, capital L, capital Q, 25. And that's a 25% discount. And what I'm doing there is I do a 2-day orientation with clients to start off a consulting arrangement.
Right.
We're doing that kind of crowdsource. So instead of it being a one-on-one, we're limiting space to it, but I'm doing a full-blown 2-day engagement, but we're inviting multiple churches to come in and experience that together in a collaborative environment.
They just find that on Oksano's website.
Yep, oksano.com, and at the top of the website, there's a little bug there that says Oksano Boot Camps, and you'll find information not only on the pastoral succession one, but the other two that we're doing as well.
Yeah, if you go to today's show notes as well, lifeway.com/leadership, and click on today's episode, you'll find that link as well.
Good deal. Well, thank you guys for listening so much. As always, please leave us a rating and review. It helps others find us, and also gives Daniel some encouragement.
I need encouragement. I do. All
right. Thanks for listening.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership. And select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.